It's Morning Edition on WNYC. I'm Carrie Nolan. Queens voters are choosing a new district attorney for the first time in almost 30 years. Richard Brown took office in 1991 and died this spring after declining to run for another term. WNYC's Beth Fertig has been closely watching the seven candidates vying to replace him in next Tuesday's Democratic primary. She reports on how each one pledges to be a different type of prosecutor than Brown.
It's a remarkable moment in city politics. At forums with the candidates running for Queens District Attorney, all seven told voters in Jackson Heights they won't prosecute people arrested for low-level crimes.
Never.
No.
These offenses include marijuana possession, working at an unlicensed massage parlor, or riding electric bikes on the sidewalk.
No.
With crime at record lows, district attorneys in the Bronx, Manhattan, and Brooklyn have already lightened up on prosecuting fare beaters and people caught with weed. But Queens took a tougher approach under former DA Brown. Now, those seeking to fill his seat each say they'll be much more progressive. One candidate wants to radically rethink the role of prosecutor.
I've spent my entire career as a public defender here in the city. I've represented over 1,000 clients against a DA's office that has measured success through convictions and sentences.
That's Tiffany Caban, the only public defender in the race. At 31, she's the youngest candidate, and she describes herself as a queer Latina. Caban says locking people up doesn't make communities safe.
I take issue with using the term criminals. Like, too often we're using this binary system of, well, good people and bad people. We need to lock up the bad people. But what we're talking about are just people, right? And so what we need to do is take these trauma-informed, holistic approaches that get to the root causers of behavior.
For Caban, that includes more substance abuse services, housing, and restorative justice. Caban's gotten a lot of buzz for her grassroots campaign. She's supported by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, a leader in criminal justice reform. But Caban never worked in Queens. Borough President Melinda Katz argues the job of DA should include local experience.
You cannot do it by introducing yourself to the communities and the groups on January 1st. You have to have a history of trust. You have to have a history that knows folks. You have to have a history of working with the organization so that they know who you are and that you know who they are.
Katz is the candidate of the Queens Democratic Party, which famously lost a congressional primary last year to Ocasio-Cortez. The other elected official in the race, Councilman Rory Lantzman, also has no prosecutorial experience, but he points to his record pushing for criminal justice reforms as a council committee chair. And he says the new state law ending cash bail for misdemeanors and nonviolent offenses doesn't go far enough.
We have to end cash bail. It is immoral, it is unjust, and it punishes people exclusively because of their poverty. And let me make an important point, I think. The legislation that was passed in Albany still allows for cash bail for so-called violent felons, people accused of a violent felony. That's about half the people sitting in Rikers Island right now because they can't pay cash bail.
Lantzman says those accused of violent offenses should also be eligible for supervised release, which can include electronic monitoring while awaiting trial. Lantzman has also campaigned on holding police more accountable, and he's been endorsed by Gwen Carr. She's the mother of Eric Garner, the Staten Island man who died nearly 5 years ago at the hands of police. All of the candidates say they'll reduce incarceration. But in what's often seen as a race to the left, the four who worked as prosecutors have tried to distinguish themselves by talking about the nuances of the job. Mina Malik worked for the Queens and Brooklyn DAs. She says that experience matters when it comes to, say, finding an alternative to jailing someone before their trial.
So as the district attorney, you have to figure out and determine what are the least restrictive means necessary to ensure public safety, to ensure that the person returns to court.
Another prosecutor, Jose Nieves, worked in the state attorney general's office on cases involving accusations against law enforcement officers. He also talks about public safety, notably when he describes those defendants who should be kept in jail before their trials.
If the individual is engaged in homicide, multiple homicides, active shooter in a situation where there's a demonstrated risk to the public in which that person will release, he may do it again, then that's a situation, not because we want to punish him, but because the first and foremost job of the district attorney is public safety.
Aside from tone, the candidates also differ on how they'd handle prostitution. It's a serious concern in Queens, where human trafficking victims often wind up in massage parlors. Caban wants to decriminalize prostitution and focus on traffickers, but most of the other candidates aren't ready to go that far, even if they'd avoid prosecuting the prostitutes. Here's Betty Lugo, who was an assistant DA in Nassau County.
I don't think that young women or even young men should consider that a profession. If you're a sex worker and you're abused and taken advantage by someone else, clearly no charges against you, but the person who's putting you up to it or human trafficked you would definitely be prosecuted.
The prosecutors in the race are trying to strike a progressive tone while also appealing to voters worried about law and order. Gregory Lasak worked in the Queens District Attorney's Office for 25 years before becoming a judge. He appears less comfortable using terms like restorative justice and decarceration. Instead, he talks about second chances and says he'll stop going after little crimes to focus on the serious ones, and he'll make sure his staff gets that message.
How would I encourage it? I would tell them, all right? We're trying to avoid putting people in jail. Get with the program.
Lasak is endorsed by several law enforcement unions. To some of the candidates, he represents the old way of doing things. During a forum in Sunnyside, Malik told the crowd Lasak couldn't be trusted to change the office because of a nickname.
Your nickname was Mr. Murder.
Mr. Murder. Malik was referring to an old newspaper story about Lasak's experience heading the homicide unit at the Queens DA's office. Her point was that the DA didn't also have a unit for overturning wrongful convictions.
All right, let me finish my answer.
But Lasak said former DA Brown wouldn't allow it. Instead, he said he took it upon himself to exonerate innocent people.
I worked on those cases quietly and exonerated over 20 men of color, myself, with no fanfare.
In many ways, the race for Queens DA is about trust. At a time when voters are figuring out how much change they want after almost 30 years of leadership by Richard Brown, they'll decide who's best equipped to shape the office the way they want it now. Beth Fertig, WNYC News.
You can learn more about the candidates running for Queens District Attorney and see a recent debate at WNYC.org. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Queens voters about what they think of the candidates. It's Morning Edition on WNYC. The most important election in the city this year could be next week's Democratic primary for Queens District Attorney. After almost three decades of leadership by former DA Richard Brown, seven challengers running to replace him are promising a different approach to law enforcement. WNYC's Beth Fertig talked to Queens voters about what they're ready for.
Queens native Michelle Gann knows what she wants in her next district attorney. She describes a progressive who will solve the causes of crime and not just lock up offenders.
When you build jails, people fill them. And so I think we need to decarcerate. I think we have an over-incarceration problem. I think we tend to criminalize Black and brown and immigrant communities, lower-income folks.
I met Gann after a forum for the seven DA candidates in Jackson Heights. She's 22, and there's only been one district attorney for her entire life, Richard Brown. When he took office in 1991, the city recorded more than 2,000 murders, and the crack epidemic was raging. But a lot has changed since then. For one thing, crime is at historic lows, and there's been a growing understanding that too many people of color have been sent to Rikers on low-level offenses just because they couldn't afford bail. But as other district attorneys eased up prosecuting fare evasion and marijuana possession, D.A. Brown didn't. Today, the seven Democrats running to replace him all say they'd avoid sending as many people to jail. They'd also take a closer look at police misconduct. Carlton Williams of Rochdale Village says he's for Councilman Rory Lantzman.
Many times I've seen him on the programs, he's standing up for people's rights, standing up to police brutality. Yes, so he's one of my favorites.
Two candidates for Queens DA portray themselves as true reformers, Lantzman and former public defender Tiffany Caban. They want to end cash bail, even for those charged with violent crimes.
They say there are better ways to keep track of defendants before trial while providing counseling and services to solve the drivers of crime. Jackson Heights voter Rhoda Dunn supports Caban,
saying currently we're doing what we're doing. We're incarcerating people and throwing away the key. And is that making us safer?
Another candidate who supports alternatives to incarceration is Borough President Melinda Katz. But Queens is an enormous, diverse borough. Some voters aren't comfortable with diverting so many offenders from jail, especially when you get away from the more liberal-leaning neighborhoods of Northwest Queens. These two voters saw the candidates at a forum in Jamaica.
There should be more compassion, but that does have to be balanced. You can't let everybody out.
There definitely needs to be some reform in the criminal justice system, no doubt about it. However, I'm getting the feeling that we might be going a little bit too left.
That's Ida Vernon and Robert Sophia.
I'm a victim of a crime myself where I was assaulted, and the person that victimized me was basically given a slap on the wrist, wasn't even arrested.
Neither would say which Queens DA candidate they're choosing, but those who aren't ready for dramatic change may be leaning toward the former prosecutors. There are four of them: Mina Malik, Jose Nieves, Betty Lugo, and Gregory Lasak. He worked in the Queens DA's office for 25 years before becoming a judge. At a candidate event in Sunnyside, voter Mark Levitt noted Lasak is the only one supported by law enforcement unions.
If you can't have the support of the police, how can you run justice in a borough that's bigger than 15 states?
Other voters may prefer someone they know. Borough President Katz is considered the candidate of the Queens Democratic machine. To some, that's a negative. But Anthony Lemma says it's a plus because Katz has been a city and state lawmaker.
She's been a success in everything she's ever done. I mean, she's just a total package. She's been steady all the way throughout her entire career.
With seven candidates in a race that's not expected to draw a lot of voters, this is a highly competitive election. Katz, Lantzman, Lasak, and Caban either all have substantial money or troops on the ground. And with no well-known Republican running so far, whoever wins the Democratic primary is likely to be the first new DA Queens has had in a generation. Beth Fertig, WNYC News.
For more on next Tuesday's primary race and to see a recent candidates forum, visit WNYC.org. Later on Morning Edition, Boeing got a big vote of confidence for its troubled 737 MAX jetliner. A European airlines group has inked a deal to buy 200 of the planes.
It's exactly what Boeing needed right now to shift the narrative and reestablish confidence in the 737 MAX and their ability to make it right.
But the company's troubles are still far from over. We'll have more on that story coming up in about 15 minutes. Stay with us. ...67 degrees, cloudy skies in New York City. Pretty dense fog here and there. You'll see showers this morning, a better shot this afternoon, with highs around 73 degrees.
WNYC supporters include Hair Story, creators of New Wash, a new way to wash hair that replaces both shampoo and conditioner, is biodegradable, and comes in refillable packaging. More information is available at hairstory.com. You value the programs you hear on WNYC. That's why you're listening right now. So are thousands of others, people who would learn about your business on our air. Learn more about corporate sponsorship at wnyc.org/sponsor.
On the next All of It, meet Lazarus Lynch, the man behind the popular Instagram handle, Son of a Southern Chef. We'll talk about his debut cookbook, Son of a Southern Chef, Cook with Soul. Plus, comedian Tig Notaro talks about her stand-up and writing career and her new talk show, Under a Rock with Tig Notaro. I'm Allison Stewart. Don't miss All of It, weekdays at noon on WNYC.
It's Morning Edition. I'm Carrie Nolan. Last month, Dr. Lakeisha Walrond became the New York Theological Seminary's first African-American and first woman president in its 119-year history. WNYC's cultural critic Rebecca Carroll sat down with Walrond to discuss her appointment and what she hopes to do with her ministry at this historic religious institution. Rebecca joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Carrie.
So last week, you talked to another Black first, Zach Stafford, who just became the first African-American editor-in-chief of The Advocate. You asked him about the honor and also the burden of being a first. How did you approach that with Dr. Walrond?
So what came up in my conversation with Stafford was that we both felt is depressing that we're still having firsts in 2019. But on the other hand, there's something about it that still feels like a badge of honor, like a testament to our resilience. Dr. Walrond said something similar. You look at where we are, right? It's 2019, and you think that we should have already had these kinds of firsts, right, a long time ago, because this institution, New York Theological Seminary, is 119 years old.
I was going to get to that next.
Right.
Yes, yeah.
And so the fact that it's taken 119 years for them to have their first female president, it is exciting, but at the same time, you wonder why and how did it take so long?
The seminary was founded in 1900. That is a long wait.
I mean, it really is. But also, what's important to remember is that that was during a violently anti-Black racist time in history. The Jim Crow South, lynching still happening on the regular, segregation, and the KKK when they still wore hoods. And it was shaped around this idea of urban ministry. And I was really interested in knowing what exactly was meant by that, since the word urban now is so often code for Black. So here's what Dr. Walrond said about that.
It means ministry in the context of where the masses are. So we think about New York being the urban capital of the world. It's not necessarily the Black capital of the world, but it's the place where all of these issues, when you have large gatherings of people who are trying to move forward in work and in ministry and in life, the issues that they tackle along their move. Mm. So like the mental health issue, like the mass incarceration, issues of hunger and homelessness, those issues, education, where we see people on the ground doing the work to make sure that everyone has the same access and is able to move forward in a way that's beneficial not only to themselves, but to the community and yet to our world.
Is there a corollary rural ministry?
That's a great question. Absolutely. I think there are issues that happen in rural communities that are unique to those areas. I had great grandparents who were farmers and so grew up on the farm. And I was that, you know, great grandchild who was going and picking apples for the apple pies and, you know, feeding the chickens and those kinds of things. So certainly I think there are issues that are unique to rural areas. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I still think that those communities experience urban issues as well.
So, Rebecca, even if urban doesn't mean Black in this context, religion has historically played a major role in the Black community.
Absolutely. And it's kind of amazing to think of the origins of that meaning and measure. As a fairly non-religious Black woman myself, I've often wondered how we manage to sustain whatever faith in God we have as a culture. Here's what Dr. Walrond said.
When I think about our ancestors who were enslaved people, and I think about how they were able to find faith in such dark times and in such difficult circumstances. One of the things I remember is the fact that it was illegal, right, for enslaved folks to read. And so they really didn't have access to the Bible as we have access to the Bible. But somehow, even in not having access to the Bible, they were able to find the Lord. They were able to be in relationship with this God who they believed would deliver them from the oppression of slavery. And so we have had a strong God and faith belief system from even back then that has stayed with us and helped to push, I believe, our race forward. And I think that's where our faith comes in. It's always been kind of undergirding our community, that hope that things will get better, that things have to get better, you know, that the mountaintop is there for us.
That is a lot to wrap your head around, especially as we continue to see such pain and injustice targeted particularly at the Black community.
I know, and I couldn't help but ask Dr. Walron, because the seminary does a lot of work with incarcerated Black men, what her thoughts were about the Exonerated Five, formerly the Central Park Five, who are having a much-deserved moment of justice and appreciation as the result of Ava DuVernay's Netflix series When They See Us.
I'm so grateful that the Central Park Five is being brought to light the way that it is. But there are so many more women and men who are suffering in our system that need the help, that need the same help, that need the same attention. So I'm so grateful that New York Theological Seminary has a master's in professional studies program at Sing Sing Correctional Institution that was started back in 1986. We'll be celebrating 40 years of graduating men with this degree. So if we get back to the fundamental thought that we're all human, then whether we are in prison or whether we are not in prison, we're still human.
And we can nourish each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And support each other and help each other find a way forward. Because there are a lot of people who aren't in prison physically, but who are in prison mentally, absolutely. Psychologically, yeah. Spiritually. And so how do we minister to those folks as well?
Wow. She sounds completely undaunted by the work ahead of her.
I know, and that is where my faith lies. That's really what my God is about, a Black woman stepping in to lead a century-old institution with the mission of lifting up our people and reminding us and everyone that we're all human.
WNYC's cultural critic, Rebecca Carroll. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thank you, Carrie.
Lift every voice.
Support for WNYC comes from Fairleigh Dickinson University's Graduate School of Public and Global Affairs, offering a Master of Public Administration for those who wish to transform, lead, and serve. Scholarship support available. More at fdu.edu/MPA.
A hearing on reparations for slavery gets to Capitol Hill for the first time in more than 10 years.
People talk about reparations in the terms of getting a check. How could you determine that kind of a value?
Representative James Clyburn and others reflect on this moment. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway, weekday afternoons at 3 on 93.9 FM.